Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello guys, and welcome to this week's episode of Heavy Metal Tones with me, your podcast host, Tony Evans. I hope you had a good Easter. If this gets you, if you're listening to this now and it's just come on the other side of Easter, I hope you've had a good Easter. It's been a quiet one here. We've had sort of a little bit of a family emergency. Our cat's been unwell, and still is unwell actually, but so it's been a sort of a nice time to catch up and sort of spend time with her and help her recuperate. This episode, bass. Now, people might say, "Oh, you're a bit biased, Tone, because you're a bass player." My microphone stand just fell over. There you go. I'm not sure what happened there. Anyway, yes, you might say you're a bit biased, Tony. You're a bass player. Why are we talking about bass playing now? Almost 200 episodes in. Well, I've talked about it before. I was just watching a video scrolling through social media, as you do one dark and lonely night, and you know you can't sleep, and I watched a video of this kid playing some amazing bass stuff, and one of the comments was, I mean, there was really some really positive comments, but there was a lot of negative comments. One was bass players should just stay playing the root note, stop showing off, which I thought was a really, really sort of horrible thought of what people think of bass players. I mean, the same thing with drummers today. I mean, the rhythm section seems to be, because we're not the sexy section of the band, rock and roll that is, people think, oh well, they're obviously just, you know, stupid, can only play with four notes, don't chord anything. You know, just dump, 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 which is a load of bullshit. Pardon my French. I'm going to give you a quick rundown. Those that are, I mean, everyone should know what a bass guitar is, right? It's basically the same as an ordinary six-string guitar or what, seven-string or whatever you want, but has four strings. It can be five, it can be six, it can be eight, but traditionally it's four strings. Okay. Now, it was first invented in the 1930s by Paul Tutmarc, T-U-T-M-A-R-C, if I said that wrong, I'm sorry, of Seattle, Washington. He developed the first bass guitar, first modern form that is anyway, a fretted instrument that is played horizontally. He called it the bass fiddle, model 736. It was a 3.5-inch scale and a single pickup. There was only 100 made. And I think where he went wrong is he called it the bass fiddle. If he hadn't called it the bass fiddle, he may have sold more copies of it. But then in the 1950s, Leo Fender... It was also accompanied in his shop by the Model 236 bass amplifier. And this was made by his own company, Audiovox. So there are still surviving... There's one or two still surviving of that instrument. And I would... I would sort of direct you to go and have a look and Google it. The AudioVox bass fiddle and see what it looks like. Pardon me. Sorry, I had a bit of a yawn there. It was just, I'm recording later tonight than usual and a bit tired. So, yeah. The 3-6 bass fiddle. Go and have a look. And then in the 1950s, Leo Fender and George Fullerton invented the first mass-produced precision bass. It looks a bit like a Telecaster, a solid slab body, a single coil pickup. It wasn't until 1956 that the design became more like the Stratocaster, an ergonomic cut out of the back for the waist to make it more comfortable, a more smoother access to the higher notes, and it had a split pickup design. And then in the 60s, Fender brought out its deluxe bass, which then was renamed the Jazz bass, which is the one I use. I've got a 1972 Fender Jazz. I prefer my Jazz bass because I like the feel of it, like the body shape of it. It's the sort of thing, because Steve Harris and Myron Bain plays it, I think I feel the same slightly. Well, I like the pickup sound. I like the way that the it feels on the body, and it just, for me, it says rock and roll. Does a jazz bass, even though it says jazz, you know, but it's a jazz bass says rock and roll to me. Now, it was taken up by a lot of people. A lot of companies in the 60s started to copy it. Yamaha, Gibson, Tesco or TISCO, Tesco, and Gaiatone. A lot of Japanese companies were taking them up as well, of course, and traditionally just a four string. You very rarely did you see, I mean, Fender had the Fender 6, which is a six string bass, but that didn't come until much later. And you know, it's a really interesting instrument, right? Because for me, people, you know, there's people say there's two school of thoughts, you know, like there's a finger player and there's a picker. I could never pick a bass. I still can't. I was talking to a mate of mine. We were at a bit of a jam recently and I said, look, I really can't pick a bass. It doesn't feel natural. It doesn't feel right. I know that you don't get with the kind of heavy metal sounds that I do love. It's very tricky to get the kind of really driven sound with your fingers, but it can be done. I mean, Steve Harris proves that time and time again, and a lot of people do. I often, if I'm doing covers of tracks that are played with a pick, I will play it with fingers and I still get the same kind of attack. Maybe not 100% the same attack, but I sort of do. See, for me, the bass guitar is like a drum kit. Can you imagine playing the drums with anything but sticks and maybe brushes? It would feel weird, right? I just don't. I like when I'm playing the bass. I like to feel the bounce of the string, the rhythm movement of on through my fingers. I like to feel the. It's like playing the drums, right? It's a percussive instrument. You say that when you've had a few jars. It's a percussive instrument. You know, I mean, you know, there's the old jokes, isn't there? How many bass players does it take to change a light bulb? One, but the guitarist has to show him how first.
Right.
Oh, dear. What's the definition of optimism? A bass player with a mortgage. All these sort of things I've had thrown at me in the past, you know. But, no, it's back to what I was saying. So it's a percussive instrument. They're nice, thick strings. They've got a nice feel under the finger. You know, it just feels, particularly with the nuances. Like, if you're attacking a bass string with a pick, a big heavy pick, and you're just going at it like you're playing a six-string guitar, there's very few subtle nuances you can give it. And I know there are people out there shouting at this me right now, saying, yes, you can, I can, there's lots of this band, this player, yeah. agree and grant you. When I talk about the players to look out for and the players that I love listening to in on the other side of the show, there will be players that play with a pick. I'm not saying that it's the wrong thing to do. It's something I can't do. I'm not saying that if they play with a pick, they're not bass players. That's a load of crap. But it's just something that I really just can't do. And I've always wondered why I can't do it, because I play the guitar as well, and I have no problem holding a pick playing guitar. But when it comes to the bass, when I pick it up, I can only really use my fingers. And I think, again, I think it's because I was trained that way and because I grew up watching all the greats. My hero is Steve Harris. He's a finger player. And when I watch, it's funny, when I watch bass players, particularly on either video or live, I'm straight away looking at their technique, particularly their fingering technique. Their fretting technique is something that it's just the way it is. I've got quite small hands for a man, actually, and so I find it sometimes difficult to stretch certain notes, and so I tend to find ways around it to make it work for me. All right. So everyone's fretting hand is always going to be slightly different, but people's fingering techniques, it's very interesting. I've watched videos of people trying to do Steve Harris, and they get it wrong every single time. And then you watch Steve Harris do it and explain it, and it's completely different to what everyone else thinks he's doing, right? I watched a video of people, and it's basically he's not plucking the string, he's tapping the string. That's how he gets that gallop, right? And it's also the fingers. It's 3-4-3, 3-4-3. I think so. Like, it's not just 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3. Like, although there are parts like that in his music, it's completely different. Now, the bass guitar itself is prevalent in every piece of modern music. Okay, from blues to rock to jazz to pop, funk, disco, reggae, metal, hard rock. You name it, it's there. Even the 80s synth pop, it's there, right? And so it's one of those things that when people say, oh, I didn't hear the bass, there's a good reason why people these days aren't hearing the bass as much as they used to. It's because it's produced to be played through your headphones and your phone speaker. And so it doesn't have the kind of warmth, resonance and attack that you would have if you play it for your stereo speakers, particularly my 70s stereo speakers that I have. Even the most expensive Sonys, which I own, some very expensive Sony studio headphones, they will give you that, but where it's coming from first, you know, it has to come from something. So if it's mixed for people's phones, which most music is now, or it's been mastered, remastered for people's phones, you're going to lose some of that low end, that depth. Now, the great bass players, which we will talk about in the second half, great bass players are not players that only play up in the dusty end, right? They play in the dusty end as a term, that's the top end, the top four frets, right? A good bass player will play the entire length of the guitar fretboard. He or she, will not feel uncomfortable coming down and noodling around in around the 12th or the 15th fret, right? Which I do as well. I absolutely love playing. In fact, I do more playing around there than I do up at the dusty end in the top five strings, right? Top five frets. Obviously, they're there because most rock and roll is played within that point, but there's also if you listen to certain music, which I listen to a lot of top music, where, or I play lots of music where it's a down a bit further down and it's a little bit more melodic, it's a little more less one octave underneath the guitar, one, you know, and just playing the root note, which is, you know, sorry to say this, there are bass players beginning to learn the instrument. You do that first. God, it's boring. It's so dull. I don't know how they do it for a 3-hour concert. Just, you know, just dum 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 dum. I couldn't. I'd go absolutely bloody mad. I'd get a little bit bored and go off tangent. One of the last jams I did was really good. We did a few cover songs, and then the last 40 minutes was just a sort of like one jam, and it was amazing. It was just in this, I just didn't know where I was. I went all over the place. It was just fantastic. It was just so crazy and heavy and melodic and punky and jazzy and bluesy in some respects. It was just really, really fun. And it was nice to play with a drummer as well, which you don't get often the opportunity to do so these days. So that's really, that's, so you know what I'm saying? So it is, it isn't, I don't know, it, where I, where do I sit? I mean, of course, I would love to be able to play the, with a pick, of course, but it just doesn't work. I could, I suppose, if I really tried and sat down and practiced. If I was in a band that said, you're only playing, this is the only stuff you can play, I probably would be okay with it. But I think it, I think what happens with pick players is that they come from playing guitar. Was I went from straight into bass. I did play a little bit of guitar when I was in my teens, and I still play. But because all the bands that I ever wanted to be in all around the local area all had guitarists but no bass players, I took up playing the bass because I thought, well, I'll be able to get into the band. And I sort of fell in love with it. I fell in love with its simplicity, but its ability to be complex in a simplicity, in a simple form. You still chord. I mean, I still chord when I'm playing the bass, but there's, it's just like playing, I don't know, it's just, there's a freedom within the bass that you don't have with the guitar. Because you're not expected, when you're a guitarist and particularly in a metal band, you're expected to be widdly diddly all over the place, right? You're expected to be able to play, you know, your solos at the speed of light and come up with some Tony Iommi style-esque riff, whereas it, with the bass, you're sort of given a bit more freedom. Once the guitarist, unless you come up with an, obviously you come up with a riff, and you can, and often I have done, but you, most of the time, you, the guitarist, as in that joke I just said about how many bass players take this light bulb, the guitarist says, I want you to play around here, and, or we're playing this, and then you can sort of have a freedom around that if you've got a strong enough character. And some of the bass players we're going to talk about in the second half are just like that. They're not the, some of them are the prominent members of the band because they're the lead singers and so on, which means that they are probably more altruistic and forward than the rest of the band. But most bass players, you meet quite quiet guys that are usually not over bombastic and just want to, you know, bite into a rhythm, which is one of those things that's really joyful once you get into it and you really get it working. It's something of something to behold, to enjoy that kind of freedom and that kind of bite. Anyway, enough of me on this side. That's bass, right? My grumble about people who don't understand bass players. I hope you haven't been bored by it. I mean, I personally thought this was a good, I thought, wow, I haven't done anything about bass playing. We're going to go and have a rest now, come back, and I've got a big list of bass players. I'm not going to go into the history of every one of them, just what I think of where they sit, why I think you should be taking notice, and why then players that aren't just, you know, root note dull boys that just go the 1 2 3 1 2 3 4 1 2 3 kind of bass tune. Anyway, I'm going to get myself a drink because it's getting really hot here today. Even though it's late at night. See you on the other side. Bye for now.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Two of Heavy Metal Tones, the episode all about the bass. Now, as I was saying before in the first part, actually I was having this, I think, while I was having my drink. As I said, there are two types of bass players, right? There are bass players and there are guitarists who play the bass. Now, obviously, it's a stringed instrument. And you have to understand the nuances of playing a stringed instrument. So guitarists will tend to make good bass players if they can free themselves from the constraints of the complexities of lead guitar or rhythm guitar. Sometimes those have transferred over have made fantastic bass players because they... see the music and you know they can make the rhythm, the pattern, complicated in a more simple way, if you know what I mean, right? Some great bass players I'm going to mention, they were former drummers, and again they're also they understand the rhythm section of the band. They understand that if you take away, and I'd really love you if you could do this, like. Put on one of your favorite tracks, and if you've got it on stereo, and then turn your bass off, and you can really notice the difference. Yeah, it's going to take some of the bass tones out of the guitar. I know that in the singing, but if you lose the bass completely, or if you Google YouTube, some songs they can do, you can YouTube them without the bass on or the drums on, like clean track, it is the craziest thing. It's so dull, you know, it just doesn't work. It still feels flat. Like there was I'd mentioned this in the show before, but there was a thing with John Bonham where they took Bonham's drumming and they modernized it, so it was all clicked to a track, it was all clean, it was all quantized, and when they played it back, it lost all of its feeling and its nuances, all of it. It all just gone, right? Because the thing about Bonham is that he was sloppy, but he was a genius drummer that was not robotic. And I think the trouble with now is that they want the robotic stuff. All right, they don't want, you know, it's like that click to track. Same with bass, it takes away some of that that fluid, funky nuance that you get from it. You know, one second. Sorry, my headphone jack decided to do something weird and I couldn't hear myself with the studio headphones. I've had one of those days today. Anyway, so Bonham, click track, quantized, computerized, digitized, and ruined. Now people might say, no Tony, no it's not, no, it's the future of music, it's what people want to hear. I think not. I think it's what people want It's what studios want people to hear because it's the easy way to produce it. Anyway, that's a different story. We've already covered that kind of subject in the past. I'm not going to go back over it. Now, bass players. Now, as I said to you before, there are foundational bass players. The ones that, if you're interested in listening to bass or instrument playing the instrument, and you're listening to this podcast and you go, oh, who should I listen to? Where should I get some inspiration? There are foundational bass players. They're the ones that it doesn't matter the genre they're in at all. It just listen to the way that they attack their instrument or the way that they come to their form of music. Now, of course, these names are genius. These musical geniuses, these people here, this is not going to be something that you're going to go, all right, I can suddenly play that piece of music. That's not what I'm saying. But the best way to learn is to copy. And if you're going to copy something, these are the foundational pieces that I would do. These are the people that I copied when I was a kid. All right. Now, some of them, you'll say, why isn't that a foundational person? And I'm going to, you'll go, oh, you've missed this, so I wouldn't have put that there. It doesn't matter. This is my opinion, okay? It's obviously Steve Harris from Iron Maiden. If you're going to be a heavy metal bass player and you want to play traditional heavy metal, not extreme metal, then you're going to be looking at Steve Harris. Because, as I mentioned before in the first part of the show, he's got a technique like unlike anyone else. But not just that. He is an ex-drummer. He was originally going to be a drummer. He's got this musicality within his soul. He writes most of the music, and he writes, so it's the other way around, right? Him telling the guitarist what to play. He's got a musicality within his fingers, and this is why his finger playing is why he's one of the best finger players in the world, because he's got an attack on it that even you can't really copy with a pick. It's so individual and so unique, but at the same time, it's very musical, very rhythmical. He has some really interesting, of course, he invented the gallop. And people say, oh, no, he didn't. Someone else, no, the Maiden Gallop is the Maiden Gallop, right? And if you don't know what that is, put on Run to the Hills or any Maiden your choice, and you will hear Steve with his gallop, okay? And he's a foundational bass player in the heavy metal scene, along with the great Ian Hill from Judas Priest. You're going to say, but surely you mentioned last week he doesn't do a lot. I didn't say that. I did get someone said it to me, but I didn't say that. No, I just said he doesn't move around a lot. His bass lines are very, very much blues driven. To different tonalities within the phrasing and in the structure of his music. He's not just a one note wonder. Looking at him, you think he's not doing much apart from maybe seesawing back and forth with his guitar, but he actually is. He's knuckling down, okay? Along with that, and the same, if you're looking at metal, the same foundation bass player would be Geezer Butler. He, along with Steve Harris, to be honest, are the two that you should really have a look at. Now, Geezer comes from being a guitarist originally. Very, very intelligent man. Very artistic, very thoughtful, very intellectual. And so his bass playing is really rhythm, really knuckled into the drumming. It really complements the drums in Sabbath, but mainly it's his ability to copy Iommi's solos almost down to the root core music and then adding bits on top. I mean, some of the stuff that he does is so heavy and so driven. Again, another finger player. Traditional bass player, right? Boy of the 50s, music of the 60s, in a band in the 70s. You know, that kind of thing. So I don't think they even thought about picking bass then, because it was more traditionally finger bass. Because people like John Paul Jones, who was a big hero, he's from Led Zeppelin, that those don't know, would have been the same. They would say he would have been a big fan of his, also a big fan of McCartney, another another foundational bass player. Now, McCartney goes between picking and fingering, but the thing about McCartney's bass lines is that he does do a walking bass line, which I haven't talked about before, but walking is when you're taking that same rhythm all the way up and down the fret and back again. As it says on the tin, it's a walking bass line. It's not just sitting into the root note. And those players I've just mentioned are foundational ones, along with Chris. And then if you're going into something more interesting and more more proggy, a little bit more beyond the metally rock scene, you want to look at people like Jack Bruce of Cream, Tony Levin, who's been with everyone. I mean, Tony Levin is playing with absolutely everyone. I mean, everyone in the prog scene has played with Tony Levin, right? He's a genius bass player. Of course, Chris Squire, because he wrote, in my opinion, the greatest bass line ever recorded, and that's Roundabout. You should listen to Yes's Roundabout and listen to Chris Squire's bass on that. And if you, and now that's picked bass. He always picked his bass. He figured it occasionally, but mainly picked it. He's a big unit, and so like he'd hold that the guitar, and it looked like a twig in his hand. I'd pick it up, and I'd need two hands to hold it, right? So just listen to the way he picks, and he picks right near the bridge, so he gets that really. If you pick down near the bridge, you get a much bouncier, harder sound. You pick up near the fretboard, which is what I play, or so I finger up near the fretboard, it's more softer, more fluid, but his is much more aggressive down back the way, so you get a real sort of bounce. And he would often follow his pick through with his thumb, would deaden the note as he came back through, so he got a little bit of a slap sort of. It was a technique that Chris loved doing, and it comes across in Roundabout, which I highly recommend. And then, of course, it moves on to, you in that same area, you've got Geddy Lee. Now, Geddy Lee is a finger player, but I've seen him play pick. Now, people do say Geddy Lee of Rush. If you're a singer and a bass player, I personally think to myself, that's double the points in the bank, because to keep rhythm and be interesting in the rhythm section and hear the drama and know where you are in that space and sing, because most of the time guitar, the bass doesn't stop, it just keeps going, so you know. And I just feel that fascinates me, because I couldn't do it, concentrate on the two things at once. I can do a bit of backing vocals when I'm not playing a note, for instance. But again, John Entwistle, Google, if you don't know who he is, from The Who, he's my hero. He's my personal hero, my number one, along with Chris Squire and Steve Harris, they're my three. He was a trumpet player, a big unit again, so he had very strong fingers it was called Thunder Fingers. There's a great documentary called Thunder Fingers. And he was unlike any other bass guitarist around at the time, because he was in a time with The Who. Now, you know, you've got your Pete Townsend whirling around, you've got Keith Moon behind you, the genius drummer that he was, you have Roger Daltrey with a voice like unlike anyone else. But what John was doing was, he was actually like playing like a rhythm guitarist, was basically the second guitarist to Pete. And often, and this is controversial for a lot of people, he was a better guitarist in the band on that particular time. Now, Pete, with all his flamboyance and all his amazingness, I don't know, without John, The Who would not be The Who. It's like saying without, you know, when Keith died, we couldn't go on. I sort of agreed about that, but I did. They moved and they made some great music. But when John died, too young, unfortunately, they really should have not carried on. But anyway, it's a different story. Okay, so these people are your foundation kind of bass players. They're the ones you should look at and look to. But there are so many new modern bass players. Okay, sorry. Also, Phil Lynott and Glenn Hughes. Now, Phil Lynott, of course, from Thin Lizzy. He's a picker. And, you know, and Lemmy. I mean, I chose not to say things like Lemmy too obviously because he's a different. I'm going to set him aside. Park the thought about Lemmy for a second. We'll get back to him, but he with Phil Lynott was the real driving force of Thin Lizzy. Now, obviously, he was a lead singer and a founding member of the band Hard Life because he was one of the, you know, back in the 60s, being of mixed race in Ireland was not easy. But he, you know, he rose above it, sadly, like a lot of rock and roll, drug abuse. But he had a rhythm section on him that people don't realize. They always think of Steve Gorham on guitar and Gary Moore on guitar, and they don't think of a Phil's bass line. So he's, there he is standing there, proud in the front of the stage with his leather, his sunglasses on, and his tight leather pants, and he's playing away. And you're not really thinking about what he's playing because you're listening to his voice and watching the band. But actually, I've listened to isolated Lynott bass lines, and they are fantastic. And to be able to sing the way he did and play that music, and he played that guitar, that bass, like a rhythm guitar, just like I was about to mention Lemmy does. Okay, now Lemmy is sort of straddles both foundation for me and differently the different stratosphere, because Lemmy doesn't play the instrument like anyone else. Okay, he plays that instrument, well, he did play the instrument like it was a guitar. He was a big unit, Lemmy. He had a big sound, you know. He'd cover his inadequacies by putting it up to 10, go down to 11. But he basically played rock and roll, and he chorded a lot, and he had a lot of power, and he basically played that rhythm. You very see him play. There's a great clip on YouTube where he's saying, "Hey, you know, bass players do this," and he'd go dum 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 dum, and then he'd turn his mic, his amp up to 10, and he'd fuck at it with a heavy pick and thrash his shit out of it like some demented rock and roller. And so he's in a different league. So if you want to play his kind of music, that you go and watch him and learn from him. But he's all in a different category of his own. Thank goodness for that, to be honest with you, because without Lemmy, life would be so boring in rock and roll, wouldn't it? And metal would be so boring. And then, of course, there are other types of bass players. Like, there were slap bass. I tried slap bass. I'm really, really, really bad at it. I could do the pull off, but I was really bad at the slap. I did learn to do the Seinfeld intro mute slap, sort of very badly, because I went through a stage when I was a teenager. And I'm going to mention a guy here who was he's an absolute marvel on the bass. You watch him play, and that's Mark King from Level 42. If you don't know who Level 42 are, because you're metalheads and heavy rockers, and go, "What's he talking about?" Just take a time to have a listen. Now, not all of that music is going to suit you. They'll sing songs like "Lessons in Love" and things like that. You're going to go, "Oh, it's a bit poppy," but just YouTube Mark King solos. And there's one they did recently on the Isle of Wight, gig, maybe about 4 or 5 years ago, maybe a bit longer. I found on YouTube. It's absolutely bloody amazing. He plays the guitar, the bass up high, which is not my kind of thing. I like to have it straddled down low, a bit Joey Ramone kind of thing. Now, I haven't mentioned him yet, but we'll get there. So, D.D. Ramone, I'm sorry. So, yeah, Mark King, if you like a bit of slap. Of course, if you listen to the show, you're probably not going into listening to funk and disco, but you might do. And if you wanted to add a bit of that to your textures, then have a listen to Mark King, particularly the way he, maybe not his slapping, but the way that he structures his solos. It's really a beautiful thing to watch and to listen. And then, of course, we're going to move into the untouchables of the metal world. In the bass, okay, there are some bass players in rock and roll who are just a little bit above everyone else. Now, I did forget to mention, sorry, I put a red line under him, but I forgot, in the foundation bass players, Roger Glover from Deep Purple. I've had pleasure chance to see him a few times, and he's a real chunky rock and roller. He's a real, you know, if you listen to the bass line of Highway Star, it's a real fun, movable, rocky, heavy, tuneful bass line, and he does that a lot, as does Roger. And of course, another foundation one, Suzy Quatro. Please don't forget Suzy. There are plenty of females in the bass world, and I've got a few I'm going to mention that really couldn't, you know, stand up with the best of them. But Suzy, just fun. I mean, if you don't know Devil May Drive, then you have to go and listen to that, and you have to watch her play. She lived down the road from us when I was a kid. My brother knew her a bit, sort of on and off, because he used to do a bit of gardening for her, just in around North London. Side note, you know, just name dropping, not that that really matters these days, does it really? I never met her, but my brother and my dad had met her a few times. Okay, so I'm going to talk about a bass player that when John Entwistle died, they should have stopped. Oh, their music changed. When The Who changed. The same with Phil Lynott. Because Thin Lizzy is still, you know, trawling itself around the stages. I don't know if that was a good thing or a bad thing. But Cliff Burton from Metallica. I don't talk about Metallica on the show a lot because I'm not genuinely a big Metallica fan. I know that sounds really weird as a heavy metal lover of heavy metal, but and this is what I've said before. I am a Metallica fan up to the point that Cliff Burton sadly lost his life at a young age. He was 24. He was a different... He was the heavy metal version of Chris Squire and of Geddy Lee and of Jack Bruce, and that's a big call because Jack Bruce is a beautiful, beautiful musician that had created some fantastic psychedelic jazz fusion bass lines. But Cliff Burton, the reason that his albums and the reason that Ride the Lightning for me is one of the greatest thrash albums ever made, probably is the greatest album ever made, a thrash album ever made, is because he had this ability to take rather mediocre band, and another Metallica fans screaming at me when I say that, but there's a reason why Metallica is not made as many albums as Maiden, and is not as big as Maiden, even though people will say, no, he's bigger. They're not as big as Maiden, because they didn't know how to grow beyond the sound they were in. And I think if Cliff had lived, they would have done that, because he had this, again, he's a finger player, right? You know, one of the only bass players I've ever seen, if you watch videos of him, fully head to toe in denim, 60s patches on like he's some kind of hippie. He's head banging one rhythm and he's fingering another. It's just a beautiful thing to watch and hear. And the bass line on Whom the Bells Tolls just gives me Trapped Under Ice and Creeping Death. Oh, it gives you goosebumps. I absolutely... and Seek and Destroy. It's just brilliant. And so I could put him in Foundation. I'm not going to put him in Foundation because I think he's still relevant. And I mean, all the ones in Foundation base in that Foundation list are still relevant. Of course they are. But I think that there's something he still, I don't know, he straddles both worlds for me. I could put him in to Foundation base players, but I think he should sit there. Of course, there are so many more. I mean, in the metal scene, particularly Tom Araya. Now, Tom Araya from Slayer, I've seen some very disparaging things about him and his bass playing, that he sort of just holds that root note and plays it and as hard as you can. But you try and scream the vocals that he does, and concentrate on a, you know, fiddly diddly widdly diddly bass line, isn't going to happen. So he's, for me, is an example of simplicity, but simplicity done extremely well. I love Tom Araya's bass parts. And if you're thinking, oh, but I want to play, what about more modern bass guitarists that I can watch now live and get my teeth round? There are some fantastic ones. Again, in the metal scene, these are my favourites. Joe Bench from Bolt Thrower, absolutely amazing. She, along with that band, really did sort of create those extreme metal sounds. And she's got this. People say that women bass players can't play heavy metal. That's a load of crap. You tell that to Fernanda Lira from Crypta, one of my favourite bands in the world. Joe is just like intense bass player. Again, a mixture of finger and pick, just power, 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 power. Fernanda is I saw her. She does a mixture of pick and finger as well. Of course, if you want something that straddles rock and roll, heavy metal, and sort of heavy rock, Bob Daisley, Rainbow from Ozzy, he's the bass player that Ozzy took. Rainbow took. Ozzy took it just after he went to Ozzy just after he left Rainbow, and same time, I believe, Dio went to Black Sabbath. He's real. He's a finger player, and he's a real good old fashioned rock and roll bass player that doesn't interfere, but it really knows how to push the music along. So give him a watch if you're interested. If you want to try something, if you want to see some people that are a bit more avant garde that straddle rock, pop. Sort of metal and punk, then honestly you can't go far wrong with people like Jarwobble from early Public Image Limited. He's named John Wardle. I mentioned last week. He was one of the Johns that hung around with Sid Vicious. Insanely reggae dub focus, and it has a real because reggae and dub is very bass driven, and it has that real fun bounce to it, right? The same with Youth from Killing Joke. He also is a reggae, comes from reggae and dub. He was a good friend of John of Sid Vicious. In fact, he had that white suit jacket that Sid filmed My Way in, and was caught. It was picked up by police in London, burning money. He was stoned or drunk or under the influence of something, burning money and chucking it around the streets, and the police took him in, and because the white jacket was so disgusting, they burnt it. They just sent it off, incinerated it, and it really, really, really fucked with Youth. So, but that's a side story. So, again, he's also a bass player that I copy a lot. Mixture of finger player and pick, and he has this sort of real bouncy heavy reggae dub metal kind of sound, which you really can't describe that. I may not describe it that well, but I would say he's one of my heroes, and I play a lot of his sounds. If you're looking for something different that straddles all those areas, go listen to him. Of course, there are people like Flea who are I controversially think that all of their music sounds the same. I can hear my radios in the distance, all my fans turning off. You know when people say that Status Quo is all like another song, another song? I feel the same way about Chili Peppers. It's all give it away, get away now. It's all the same kind. I don't know. Maybe I'm not. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm just that. I'm just a old man with blinkered vision. But I don't know. It doesn't do it for me. But he's again, if you're looking to emulate him and Les Claypole from Primus, funky jazz inspired madness. And you can see the line from Les Claypole back to Jaco Pastorius, who sadly died young, one of the most gifted jazz bass players ever. If you really want to see how the instrument can go and where it can go, YouTube Jaco Pastorius and have a watch with him with Weather Report, and watch him and see what he does. with that band. Yeah, no, maybe not your kind of music. It may be too, you know, skiddy bop, bap, bap, doobie doop, doop, wop, wop, you know, all that kind of jazzy thing. But some of it is just sweaty madness. It's just where he goes with it, how he moves those notes around that fretboard. It's almost, I don't know, it's a thing of pure beauty. But sadly, we lost him young, killed by a bouncer outside a nightclub. It's ridiculous, isn't it? These things happening. Anyway, one of my all-time heroes. And then, you know, if you want to listen to something a bit more real punky and go, well, I want to go more punky, then you can't go really far past JJ Brunel from The Stranglers. Anything that he does with The Stranglers is just insane. When you think that at the same time we were hearing, you know, Glenn Matlock from the Pistols, a great bass player, but he was basically just playing rock and roll and root notes, you know, and sort of bastardizations of 50s rock and roll songs, which the punks were doing back then, because it was an instrument easy. That it's one of those things you can sort of make a noise on that people won't know because they're not listening to you, right? If you know what I mean. But JJ Brunel, this sort of, I don't know, it's very hard to describe. It sounds like his strings are thicker than they are. It sounds like he's playing with rope. It's such a deep and resonant and bouncy bass line. So if you're looking for where it's done, youth in punk, youth and JJ Brunel, you know, and Kim Gordon from Sonic Youth, she, another one to keep an eye on. Yeah, fun, fast, dirty pick player, very much like in the same way as Dee Dee, as I said, the strapped up guitar low around his legs. The reason I haven't mentioned Dee Dee from Ramones is that and no disrespect to him, fun, very, very simple. And I'm trying to talk about guitarists that are a little bit more complicated and slightly different than your typical straightforward balls to the wall one note wonder. And that's no disrespect to Dee Dee, right? Okay. Anyway, and then got Leif Edling. He's one of my heroes from Candlemass. I saw him back in the 80s playing with Candlemass when Messiah Marcolin was singing. And it's doom. So when you're playing doom, it's all down-tuned. It's all slow. It's all really thick, solid sounds, right? Certainly the way to look at it. It's very deep, it's very resonant. It's not what you play, it's what you don't play in doom, and he is the master of it for me, along with Geezer, of course. And I haven't mentioned him, but he's actually a friend of mine, listens to the show. He's a real nice geezer. I've interviewed him, and that's Tony Demolition Man Doolin from Venom Inc. and from Atom Craft. He is a monster of a bass player. His parts on Primeval, he's a picker, because he basically, if you watch him live, his big hero is Lemmy. He's a big fan, he's a big punk from way back, and Lemmy really was aligned with the punks, you know. And so, you know, he's the angled mic down, he's singing up to the mic like Lemmy, and he's powering away on his big hands, and he's got that. It's extreme music, so it's going to have an extreme sound to it. It's heavy, and if you want really good example of black metal extreme bass playing, yeah, there are lots of those, you know, bands that are from Sweden and Norway and Finland. But have a listen to Venom's 90s classic Primeval. It's now streaming, available to stream, so you can't not listen to it. And the opening track, or the title track, it's a fantastic bass parts on that, so I highly recommend you having a dive into that. Now, I've gone over many bass players. If I've missed any, and there's so many, I spent a good hour yesterday just thinking about the bass players that I like listening to, and that I would listen to if I was learning to play the bass or interested to go further. Of course, there'll be names I've missed. Of course, there will be people that you'll say, hey, Tone, you didn't mention that, and I'd love you. Please do come to my Facebook page, my Messenger, and give me some of that feedback. Who have I missed? Who would you recommend? Who is you think is underrated? Is anyone new that I've missed that's out there that's, you know, unbelievable? And I'm sure there are. You know, I'm sure people will say, hey, but what about Duff from Guns N' Roses? What about, there's so many people. I don't have an entire day to list the bass players that I enjoy listening to, but these are the people that I think you should listen to. So foundation players and modern players, different techniques, finger picking, all sorts, whatever. Have a listen, see what you think. But then you'll come to the conclusion that bass players are not that man in the corner that no one listens to. The one that goes home on his own, will all the rest of the band go home with groupies? That's a load of crap. It's not the case, right? It may have been many, many years ago, but it isn't now. So I stand up for the Bass Players Union. I'm there in the corner. Thank you very much. Fully paid up. I'm going to prove my point. Anyway, that's enough for me now. Hope you enjoyed that. Chat to you next week. Watch out for, there is a bonus episode. I should have said this at the beginning of the show, because those, not everyone listens right through to the end of the show. But there'll be a bonus episode this week coming out on Friday, where I will be reviewing the new Rot Pit single by the band Rot Pit, of course. Ralph Halber's band from Head for the Dead. His other side band, his other project. And I'll be playing the whole track, I'll be playing the track on the show. So it will only be a 10-minute episode. If you want to jump in and hear some extreme music, and it is extreme, it's not for everyone, be prepared. It might, you might switch off. You might go, my God, this is amazing. I see the beauty in it. Not everyone does. But do come and have a listen. We'll be out on Friday. 10 minutes, quick review, then the track. Anyway, bye for now. Also, please like and subscribe. Bye.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.